You're listening to Breadbox Media. Find out more at breadboxmedia.com.
Good afternoon, I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, Almost Hour, culture, current events, Catholic things every afternoon for 50 minutes. This afternoon, a victory for human justice when we see sentencing of those who terroristically threatened a black family at a birthday party with shotguns aimed, basically saying that they would kill them and the children. With Confederate flags waving and a bizarre display of pride, heritage, whatever you want to call it, now facing very stiff prison sentences because of this episode, which in my opinion is indeed a victory for human dignity because it was undoubtedly compromised in the situation and what they're doing now, completely different. New Democratic Party leader Tom Perez has deep Jesuit connections and says he grew up in a Matthew 25 family. Does this mean that this is a mission statement of the Democrat Party? Is that what they're trying to say? I would applaud that in Democrats. We'll talk about that. Also, sanctuary cities and sanctuary churches, at least the Mississippi bill to outlaw sanctuary cities, being opposed by bishops. This, according to America Magazine, we'll talk about that. All of that and more this afternoon. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, Almost Hour. Back in a moment.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
Good afternoon, we're back. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, Almost Hour, culture, current events, Catholic things. We talk about that every afternoon for 50 minutes. Fat Tuesday for us. Well, Fat Tuesday for everybody. I think everybody kind of celebrates Fat Tuesday. They've hopped on the bandwagon of those who begin Lent tomorrow. And, of course, a Fat Tuesday time of shroving it out, as we call it traditionally, Shrove Tuesday, getting rid of all of the stuff that you're not supposed to eat for the rest of the time of Lent, which traditionally then, you know, was because you couldn't keep it. It was going to go bad. There's no freezing, refrigeration, whatever. So whatever you had on hand, you kind of had to get rid of before the 6 weeks of fasting. So not that fasting is quite as intense maybe as it once was in the Catholic Church, but I hope that we embrace some sort of Lenten discipline as a good time to kind of reflect, slow down, stop, focus, embrace something a little bit more, and that's what this is about. So happy Fat Tuesday to those who are celebrating, especially those who will be eating king cakes and traditional New Orleans food and things that can happen on this Fat Tuesday. We wish you well. Enjoy. So I posted this. We'll see where this goes. Now our president is saying that Obama may be behind the leaks out of his administration. We talked a little bit about this yesterday. We're going to see where the president is tonight with a joint session of Congress addressing kind of and laying out the plan for, I guess, the next 4 years or maybe the next 4 months. Not sure exactly how far-sighted that will be. But the one thing I've said is that we've yet to really see how the president is going to cooperate with Congress and where that's going to lead and what we're going to see there. And it'll be interesting to watch as this develops. Now, the one thing that we have seen is a new Democrat Party National Committee Chair, Tom Perez, who is a Catholic-educated, Jesuit-educated individual who is basically saying that Matthew 25 inspired his family. And I think that this is certainly good. Now, if we can have a pro-life-leaning Democrat party that says we respect the life of all humans, be they born or unborn, and we believe in this Matthew 25 understanding of human dignity and what that looks like, and the fact that we have to help those in need, and we have to recognize, which I think is it's important to help, but we can't help if we don't recognize. And that's kind of, I think, the lesson, as I've been discussing even in other posts on Facebook, when it comes to Matthew 25. You know, to see somebody in need of clothing or in need of food or thirsting or to visit someone who is sick, you know, it's not like we're rushing to the aid of an emergency. And I think that this is where, you know, we might recognize somebody in a distressful, like a moment of total distress, we might recognize that and we might respond. And those are big questions, whether we would or not. I think it's very easy to pass on by because we don't necessarily see people in what may not appear to be urgent as a sign of real urgency. And I think that that might be one of the lessons in Matthew 25 and something that I think that we have to think a whole lot more about as people of faith. And as we ask these questions, especially when it comes to politics, are we enacting policy that might be maybe not necessarily immediately challenging, but could it be something that has a long-term effect that really might be a problem? And I think that we've always got to put human dignity in that first point of reference. If we don't ask ourselves, is this dignified? Is it not only dignified in this decision, this piece of politics, whatever it is, this piece of legislation, this order, this judicial decision, whatever form it happens to take, is it upholding the dignity of all or the dignity of some? Because we pledge allegiance to a country that has a constitution that is based on liberty and justice for all, right? We pledge allegiance to a constitution of a country that says we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal with essentially God-given inalienable rights, that say there are rights that cannot be ever compromised. So I think we have to ask ourselves that, are we upholding that truth? Are we upholding that? And are we really embracing the true constitutionality of this country? Are we doing that? Because if we were, we would find paths to citizenship for those who seek asylum here. For those who come here, even illegally, we're going to find a way to get them onto a track of actual, especially those who are gainfully employed. I mean, they're here working. They've got jobs. They've got families. Why would we not find a way to get them on the fastest track possible? As opposed to saying, we got to put you back across the border of your country, a place that they obviously left for some reason. Maybe it was because of dreams of much bigger, better, and amazing things in America. Maybe it was because they had no opportunity where they were. Maybe because there was some degree of true oppression that they had to escape. But they are living and flourishing here and contributing to our economy. I think we have to look at that. You know, the question I ask you, because when I talk about immigration, and I talk about it from the heart of the church, and I talk about it from the sense of human dignity, right? And not legality, because we know well that as Catholics, we oppose other legislation. We oppose the law of the land that says abortion is on demand anytime. If we can oppose that law, we can oppose immigration law. We can do that, because if we deem it as being unjust, especially when it comes to mass deportations and the effect that families, the fallout of to families as a result of that, we can voice our concern. We can stand up for that and do it truly within the heart of what we believe as Catholics. We can do that. There's nothing wrong with that. Don't assume for a second that we're violating some render to Caesar, because we don't render everything to Caesar. We don't. If we did, we wouldn't have a March for Life. If we rendered everything to Caesar, we would just joyfully, gleefully move along with every law of the land. We don't do that. We don't do that. So don't assume that that's the case. We can have an organized, even, sense of civil disobedience, right? I mean, we can stand up against that which is unjust. We can do that. As faithful Catholics, I think there's a degree of expectation, quite frankly, that if we don't do that, we're missing the mark. We're missing that Matthew 25 mark, because what happens in this illustration is there's sheep and goats, and the sheep are the ones that did respond to those in need. The sheep are the flock, the true flock, right? The obedient flock of Christ. Whether that obedient flock is under one roof or not, they are the ones who did what is expected. And I think that that's something we have to understand, is that who knows what that flock is, really? You know, we think that the flock is those who are in our parish walls, or we think the flock are those who are within the fullness of the faith of Catholicism. Who knows? Part of that flock, very likely, are those Muslims who are restoring graves at the Jewish cemetery, right? Because they're responding to the call. They're responding to the call of, what are you doing for the least of these? That's what Matthew 25 demands. That's our open book test. So when we see this and we realize that these two groups, one responded to the call because they saw, they were as if they were anticipating those to be in need, and some way, somehow, whatever gifts that they were able to offer, they're able to offer them. They're willing to offer them at that point because they see this need. Then the group of the goats, they don't even see the need, right? And Jesus is basically saying, you saw me like this. And they're like, when did we see you? They didn't even see the individual. It wasn't that they didn't see Jesus, right? Please understand that, because few of us, I think, are, and I don't want to use any kind of, you know, exclusionary sort of language, but, you know, there's a maturity in faith that says Jesus is in everyone. I mean, that's you got to kind of get to that point. But that's not even what he's saying here. He's saying, look, there's basic human needs that are being unmet that you are walking beyond, that you're ignoring and you're pretending like it's a non-issue. When we say crazy things like, you know, it's all about the law, and we think that we can stand on that as people of faith, or we say, well, abortion's completely different than immigration, it's human dignity that's at risk. That's what we're talking about. That's why we're pro-life. We're not pro-life because it's murder. We're pro-life because it's human dignity that's compromised through that taking of the life. It's human dignity that's compromised when families are disbanded and gainfully employed individuals are rounded up and shipped to the country of their origin. That's a human dignity affront. Please see that. That's what we're talking about here. So we can't make these broad assumptions and really kind of a pick and choose mentality to say, well, that's this and this is that and this is where we are and we're going to believe this and not that. We got to take a holistic approach that says there is one primary measuring rod of everything we do, and that is human dignity. That is the Catholic ethos. If we get that right, I promise you we'll have credibility like you would not believe. No one will question our credibility if we get that right. More to come. We'll be back in a moment. I'm Leo Brown, Almost Hour, back after this.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
Good afternoon, we're back. I'm Leo Brown. Almost Hour, culture, current events, Catholic things. Talking about those every afternoon for 50 minutes. Speaking of Catholic things, we were mentioning this a moment ago when it comes to standing up for the rights of those who are not really able to have a voice, really not able to have a voice. And certainly those who are here illegally don't have a voice. And we can argue all day long about justice when it comes to laws and protecting borders and all of the above. I get that. If somebody's here and they're here to racketeer, or they're here to create opportunities for their drug cartel, or they're here as a political enemy, they're here to overthrow the government, they're here to violate the Constitution in some fashion, we need to identify them. Or they're here just simply breaking the laws of humanity, stealing, raping, murdering. Absolutely. Are you kidding me? We need to get rid of these people. We need to take them to Mexico or wherever they're from originally, and they need to stay in prison there. Absolutely. If they are hardened criminals, but I assure you this, hardened criminals are a small percentage of any group of individuals, and there are far more criminals born and bred here in the U.S. than any who come across the border. That's something we have to understand. So, as I've said many times, if somebody has the gumption, if they're really working on trying to get here, why are we not doing everything in our power to give them the opportunity to stay here? If they're coming for the right reasons. If they're coming here to work, find work, and create opportunities for themselves, we should applaud that. We should say, you know what? You passed the test. You've made it here. Now you're gainfully employed? Yeah. I want more people like you here. That's what I want. Let's find a way to make that happen. That makes total sense. So this story from America Magazine, apparently there is a bill that's being moved through the assembly in Mississippi, talking about declaring any sanctuary city in Mississippi illegal. Anyone who is trying to use this platform of saying that we will protect those who need protection, who are being targeted for deportation. And according to this, there is opposition to this from the bishops of Mississippi. And I think that if we understand our faith enough, we're going to realize that this is the essence. It's kind of what I was talking about a moment ago with Matthew 25. This is the essence of what we believe. If human people are being unjustly targeted, and I know you're going to say, well, Leo, it's the law, right? Well, then let's just be for abortion then, right? It's the law. Why are we opposing that? Why do we oppose? Well, it's murder. Yes, but why is it wrong? Well, it's murder. Right, but it's wrong because murder is an affront to human dignity, right? You compromise human, you cannot be dignified while the individual cannot be dignified while they're being murdered. That's the problem. An individual cannot have dignity while they are being incarcerated and or deported for crimes that they really didn't commit necessarily. They're here with families, with gainful employment. There has to be some measuring rod that says, wait a minute, let's move these individuals forward. And it's what I've said. Looking at Ronald Reagan, my goodness, the conservative savior, Ronald Reagan. We look back at Ronald Reagan as this amazing, the most supreme example of conservatism ever, in this highlight of perfection of Americanism that is Reaganism. And even he said, we have to seek amnesty. He used the words of President Obama. We have to seek amnesty for these individuals. And again, using the same sort of language, we got to realize that there's something about the heart of an individual. Whether, I don't care whether you're liberal, Democrat, conservative, Republican, alt-right, alt-left, if your heart is in the right place because you believe in the dignity of others, you're going to ultimately do the right thing. And I think that there has to be some conflict. I would hope there's some conflict in individuals looking at things of this nature and going, is this justice? is this really justice when we simply want to say, you're here illegally, you're gone? And that's kind of where we are. If you read the news of what's happening, if you see that there already are these cases where families are being divided, where parents are being somehow picked up and sent to somewhere to process, it's already happening. And if we don't offer sanctuary, if we're not the ones to stand in the gap and to say, wait a minute, we need justice to be served here, true justice. First off, here's an individual who can't support his family, who is supporting his family, let's just say. There's a problem. Now, what wasn't a government drain, because that individual was probably, let's say he had forged documents, he's getting taxes paid on his payroll, and he's not claiming taxes. He's not claiming a refund on that because his payroll taxes are paying the government, and they're never going to have to pay that back. That's one thing. Now, a family with kids who are natural citizens, not naturalized, they're citizens of the U.S. who may have been born here, and let's say that the spouse in this family is American, then now the breadwinner of the family who is now deported all have to go on government assistance because there's no other way around it. And the cost of deporting the individual, because now you've got the expense there. Whereas before there was a net gain to our economy, now there's a net drain to our economy. So what are we really talking about here? Is it some ideological concept of making us feel better because we think that now we're protecting our borders and we're upholding our laws and everything is fine, even at the expense of our own country? I don't think we're thinking about that, because we could ultimately end, after this is said and done, in way more individuals on welfare because breadwinners are gone, and what was once actually gaining because of the taxes paid that were never returned in tax returns, now a loss because of the measures that we've taken. We don't have replacement levels in this country. We are below replacing our own population. We've already dipped below that replacement rate in birth rates, especially of Western white America. We have to realize that if America is to flourish, and if America is to continue on a trajectory that says there's something about this American exceptionalism, that if somebody has sought out the opportunity to be here because they believe in that exceptionalism, or they would have stayed in their own country, then maybe we need to pave the paths to make that work as best as we possibly can. And the first ones in line are the ones who are here. You want to shut the borders down? You want to protect the borders? Do that. Go ahead. Put the extra agents on. I've not been critical of that. I want justice. I want that to be a just situation. I don't want unfortunate things happening, like the kid who got shot on the border standing in Mexico with the border agent standing in the U.S. I don't want to see things of that nature happen. But if you want to enforce the border, fine. But there has to be something about those who are already here, right? We had the wet foot, dry foot thing, whatever it was in Florida for such a long time with, hey, if they make it to the shore, well, they've made it here. Right? We had that immigration policy that said, let's accept them. I think that now is the time to say, it's not about deporting, because that is going to cause a net drain, not a net gain. Let's look at a way to have just paths forward for those who are here. Let's find every possible opportunity to make that happen. Seal the border, build the wall, whatever you want to do, but let's have justice for those who are here. Let's find a way to say, let's be as concerned about these individuals as we possibly can, especially if they have families that are going to be affected, especially if they have children who are, in many cases, born in this country and are actual citizens of the U.S. Let's find a way to protect those dynamics as much as we possibly can. And I know that there are those who are critical of the church and saying, oh, well, no, the church does not need to be a sanctuary because that's not what, you know, that's mixing politics and religion and whatever the heck else. And while in the same breath, there are those who would say, well, yeah, the church has to endorse candidacy and we've got to speak out on issues of the unborn. And these are political issues, right? So you can't have it both ways. Either we're politically engaged as people of faith and our politics inform our faith our faith informs our politics, kind of what we were talking about earlier with Perez and the Democrat Party, or we just simply are completely devoid and we get out of it, we wall ourselves away, we silo ourselves away in some sort of isolationism to the point that we don't do anything. If that's where we are, then I think we're missing the boat, because we need to be engaged. We need to be people of impeccable championship of dignity. We've got to be able to do that. And if we don't, Matthew 25 is pretty clear anyway. Be back in a moment. I'm Leo Brown, Leo Brown Almost Hour. Back after this.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
Good afternoon, we're back. I'm Leo Brown, Leo Brown Almost Hour. Culture, current events, Catholic things, we do that for 50 minutes every afternoon. And you might be able to take a moon flight, according to SpaceX. Elon Musk, the CEO of the booming space industry now, with an opportunity perhaps to be a space tourist. We've heard this for some time, perhaps developing, and now what a vacation, right? Wow. Not sure that that's my idea of fun, quite frankly. I like flying. I think there's something exciting about that, especially in smaller crafts and the things that you can experience there. But, the idea of getting, you know, breaking beyond the atmosphere, getting out into space, it might be kind of fun, but I don't know that that's where I would invest my cash, right? It's going to be incredibly expensive to be a space tourist, and it's a business endeavor for Musk, so it makes sense. But wow, interesting, to say the very least. So we've been talking a lot about human dignity today, as we do each and every day. Please understand that. First off, I want to get to this quote from Father Richard Rohr in an email that I got earlier. That humans become the God we worship. And I think that if you don't understand the subtleties of that, then I'm sorry. I know that I've had many comments on this on Facebook, but if we don't understand that God is a God of dignity, right, who created man and said, this is very good, if you don't get that part, if you don't understand that humans are such an amazing creation, that in each individual is an element of incarnation, if we don't understand that, we're never going to get it right. And if we think that there's some sort of, you know, if our God is a God of punitive measures, if our God is a God of unfettered condemnation and retribution and exclusivity, then that's what we're going to be. But I see a God that is the God of Christ, who said, it's more important for others to succeed than myself. Right? I mean, this was the message he sent. It's more important that I take the blows. It's more important that I absorb the stuff. It's more important that I stand in the gap. That's the message he came to send. Do we not see that? He didn't die on the cross, as I've said many times. I've said this for years upon years. He did not die on the cross so we can all collectively wipe our brow and say, praise God, that's not me. Right? It's like that ironic, sardonic line in USA for Africa, do they know it's Christmas time? Tonight, praise God, it's them instead of me, whatever it is. You know, if that's our reaction, we're not seeing something. Because what Jesus showed us is a way to do it right, sacrificially. To say, let's find opportunities for others to succeed above me. Let me put myself in the last place. That's the message of Christ. That's the message of the cross. We're stepping into Lent. Tomorrow begins Ash Wednesday, and this is what it's leading to. It's a time of sacrifice. It's a time of fasting to prepare ourselves to put ourselves in last place. If we don't see that, we're missing the mark. So I would invite you, ideally as I will, I promise you, to really try to investigate that more fully through this time of Lent. Really try to find a way to say, how do I do it better this time? So as I say, a victory for human dignity on this issue with a Georgia couple that apparently were part of a group, and I'm not sure what's happened to the other group. Maybe these were the only ones that got to this point of being so intense that they actually threatened the lives of a group of birthday party goers, black family, white, threats coming from a white couple who are now facing very stiff prison sentences, 13 years for the man, 7 years for the woman, something of this nature, because of this episode. And I hope this sends a very strong and powerful message that says, this idea that now maybe there's an emboldened attitude of let's be as oppositional as we possibly want to be, let's call people out who we think don't belong, let's say that there's some sort of superiority of us over them, let's hope that this sends a very clear and powerful message that that simply does not fly. That does not work in this country. That we have liberty and justice for all. And no one is to infringe upon that. Certainly not in the sense that we would go and threaten someone. I talked to a friend of Indian descent earlier today about this situation in Kansas. And I said, you know, this has got to be chilling. And you know, frankly, he wasn't quite as familiar with it as I am because I follow news very closely and I'm digging into stuff all the time. But he knew something of it, and he said, yeah, you know, the thing that really disturbs me the most are those who try to say that immigrants are here taking jobs away. And my question is, did they even apply for the job? Right? Did they even apply for the job? Did they try to get the job? Or were they just crying that they didn't get the job because somebody took it when they didn't even try for it? I don't know. So he's a pretty lighthearted, funny guy and kind of took it in that direction as opposed to the serious, more introspective look that I would take on this. But at the same time, when we're at a point in our nation's history that is mirroring that of other generations where people were treated as subhuman, where people were treated as simply a problem to eradicate, somebody who is in the way, someone who is preventing you from getting what you want or whatever, or what you think you deserve or whatever your American dream is, all of this seems to be coming back around in a very unfortunate way. These prison sentences from this incident of racism, I pray resonate. Because hopefully there will be those who say, you know, before I make a threat of that nature, and especially if I'm going to go as far as to point a shotgun at someone and threaten to kill them, I could be serving some serious prison time. Now, what was beautiful in this courtroom scene, you can find it on the link that I have on my Facebook page. There is an obvious point of catharsis on behalf of at least this woman who is in this couple, who says, that wasn't me, that's not the way I treat people, even though she did, and she's having this moment of realizing her true self, right? Which is beautiful. That's what these things should bring about. When finally you're faced with a complete and utter reality that says, this is happening, this is real. Because of your actions, you have led yourself down this road, that's what the criminal justice system is supposed to do effectively, is to have an opportunity for rehabilitation, which apparently she seemed to be having, facing what she's facing. White suburbia girl, I don't know the dynamics entirely, now going to prison because of this episode. And this, I'm assuming the mother of the family, this black woman who is saying, I forgive you. I forgive you. The most powerful moment of a courtroom drama that I've seen in true reality. Both of these individuals, tearful and as authentic as anything I've ever seen, expressing remorse and expressing forgiveness. And God willing, there'll be healing that will come from that. And perhaps and what I hope is a break to the cycle. Because if somebody's experiencing that, if somebody is exhibiting that, is what I should say, that degree of racism, it's probably been ingrained. It's probably been ingrained for a while. Somewhere along the way, the cycle has not broken. There's not a step outside of that unfortunate, continued, let's kind of preach and teach this type of hate. Generally, that's where it comes from. So if these children would have been raised with other children of other races, they would have learned to love them and be a part of their realities as friends and as family and as whatever the case may be. It's only when generationally we have this indoctrination of racism that it comes to this point. So again, my prayer is for complete healing in this situation and a very clear sign that says this cannot happen. We cannot treat people this way in this country. We have to realize that there will be strict penalties for those who assume that others have no value and express it in such a horrendous way. That's all we have time for this afternoon. Thank you so much for listening. Happy Fat Tuesday. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown Almost Hour.
Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.